Welcome to Free for All Fridays on the iHeartRadio Talk Network. Here's your host, Amanda Galbraith.
Happy Friday, everyone, and welcome back to the show. I'm Amanda Galbraith, host of Free for All Friday, where we recap the five biggest stories of the week with top talent from across the iHeartRadio Talk Network. And today we're joined by Tammy Williams, news anchor for AM 1150 in Kelowna, BC, and John Moore, host of More in the Morning on News Talk 1010 in Toronto. Tammy and John, thanks for coming on the show.
Nice to be here. Happy Friday.
Hi there. Hi to you both. Happy Friday. Nice to be here.
Happy Friday. All right. So our first big story, last night in the PM's office, the Prime Minister's office, very quietly announced that they're targeting mid-August to reopen the border fully to vaccinated Americans for non-essential travel. This basically came in what's called a readout. So the PM had a meeting with the Premiers last night, or a telephone call, and they released sort of statements about that. That's not typically how these announcements are made. Now, Deputy Premier and Finance Minister Chrystia Freeland was asked today about this at a press conference.
We are looking closely at what the next step would be, particularly when it comes to fully vaccinated or fully vaccinated American neighbors. And that is a conversation which is happening in close collaboration with the leaders of the provinces and territories.
Now, this comes as the Canadian government is facing increased pressure to open up from folks like Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and even the Ambassador to France. The Ambassador to France, Karine Reposel, joined the Evan Solomon Show this week to speak about why Canada should open the border to French tourists.
What I can see and what I can feel is the huge frustration and weariness of people trying to go back to France or to come to Canada to visit friends, family, to do business, to do some exchange programs. And that has been impossible in the last 18 months.
And as only the French can do it, she sort of said it sucks. Do we have the clip?
People know it's so difficult to come to Canada that at the end of the day, they will choose another destination. And that sucks, honestly.
She did.
Alors, oui, j'aime pas ça. Ça marche pas. C'est rigolo.
Now, John's showing off his Montreal cred. So they did say, the PM has said in that little statement that in early September, they do anticipate the rest of the world, but Canada would open up for vaccinated travels to the rest of the world. Now, you know, right now, what we can do as Canadians is if you're fully vaccinated, you can come back without having to quarantine, but that's about it. My question is, why is this taking so long? John, what do you make of this?
Well, I think we kind of have to err on the side of caution. And I have been somebody who's embraced a much greater degree of risk. You know, if I'd been advising the government, I would have thought that we should have reopened something sooner. But I'm not absolutely convinced that many people from France are desperately chafing and they need some. I have to go to Toronto. It is so important. I don't see it. And the people who have been coming and going, especially from the United States, have been doing so under the current regime. So I'm not as worried about it as some people are. Now, I get it. You know, if you're in the tourism industry, if you're running a hotel, a restaurant, a tourist destination, you work at Ripley's, places like that, then you're like, dude, we got to get this thing reopened. But I'm not sweating it that much. I mean, Americans, we're talking about the French people, but I also don't think that many people sitting in Chicago are like, oh my God, I need to get to Toronto.
But there is something for the signal it sends, right, that we are open for business. And I think one thing I talked to and friends of mine have left Canada or Ontario even is how ingrained and used to being locked down we are compared to the rest of the world. And obviously the Delta variant is a real threat. We're seeing cases rise. But, you know, I know, for example, like traffic at our airports are way down, right? And I wonder to you, Tammy, and things are a little bit different out there in BC, but, you know, is there a clamoring to reopen the border and allow U.S. tourists, like vaccinated or even international tourists, into the country where you are?
I don't necessarily know that there's a huge clamoring for international travel here to BC. What I will say is that, you know, as I'm to and fro my daily business, coming to work, going grocery shopping, all those kind of great things, I am seeing license plates from Alberta all over the place now, some from Manitoba. So I think from province to province, perhaps we're getting a little bit braver, a little more, maybe more antsy to be traveling. But like you, John, I don't know if there's this huge clamor to travel. And I think people still want to err on the side of caution. I just know I wouldn't want to be a politician at this point, you know, because no matter what you decide, it's going to be the wrong decision. I mean, we let international travelers in, boom, we're in a fourth wave. We don't, boom, we go into a recession. It's such a balancing act.
Yeah, and a lot of this, Amanda, I think, has more to do with the kind of day-to-day going across the border that people do. And, you know, I mean, there are towns, I've always been fascinated because I grew up in Quebec, and there were towns there where, like, the town library, one section is actually in the States, and another section is in Canada. There's actually one theater where you enter through the U.S., and the show happens in Canada. So there's a lot of things like that. And Tammy can probably speak to the fact that there's one crazy-ass place in just south of British Columbia where their only way out, it's United States territory, their only way to get to anywhere else is to go through Canada. And they have been cut off like a crazy infected appendix for the last 18 months.
Yeah, there's a little town north that has that issue going on. And you know, I don't know if anybody ever thought that we'd be having to answer questions like this about how soon can we allow people back into our country because of a pandemic. There's no book for this. It's so complicated.
And, you know, I want to ask you both a little bit about how this announcement was made and even kind of the timing, right? Because we're talking about, I think there's significant international pressure on the prime minister to do this, particularly from the U.S., our biggest trading partner. And it's, but you both point out, John, accurately, like I grew up in a border town in Windsor area, and we went grocery shopping in the States. Like, sure. That's where I got my back to school clothes. Like it was a 20-minute drive. Like, it's not far. You can boat across in 10, 15 minutes. But, you know, there's a poll that just came out this week that says the majority of Canadians, 69%, want at least 75% of Canadians should be vaccinated fully before reopening the border. Now, we are leading G20 in vaccination rate, 80% our first dose, and more than half have our second dose. I think we've almost surpassed the U.S., but we're not there, right? And he's heading into an election. So how do you think the PM is going to balance sort of the kind of the desires of Canadians to play it safe, which doesn't surprise me, even though I feel like I'm such an outsider. I do not want that. And, you know, the need of the international community, right? Like, he has to, like, the economy, whatever. John, how do you think the PM's gonna walk that line?
Yeah, I'm not absolutely convinced that it's that hot an issue, to be perfectly honest. I know there's a lot of Canadians. I mean, I'm one of them. I love vacationing in the U.S.
Yeah.
We're actually going to take the risk, and it's a very strict protocol. We got to get the test 72 hours before. You got to have your paperwork on your vaccines. When you get there, you've got to go get a test. When you're coming home 72 hours, get a test. When you get home, get a test. But I'm that much in love with my summer vacation in the United States. I'm going to take the risk, and I'm willing to shoulder the fact that I could end up being turned around at the airport if they say, sorry, this ain't working out for you. But I don't know. For Justin Trudeau, I still think, I've been looking at a lot of the numbers lately, and I think this election's going to be about the economy. It's not even going to be about the vaccination campaign, because that did not work out for the Conservatives. You know, they bet on a failure. They love betting on failure, and it didn't work out for them.
Tammy, you know, do you think maybe the solution to, like, because I'm having the same problem that John is, well, problems, but questions, right? Like, we were planning a trip in the fall. Now we're kind of like, what do we do? Do we book? Do we not? And I think I'm going to roll the dice a little bit. But one of the things that has been a big hot topic this week is vaccine passports, which is something some provinces have outlawed and some have said, yes, we're very interested, like Quebec. Are you hearing any noises about that in BC?
You know, the vaccine passport is such a temperamental topic. I too am probably going to take, well, I'm not going to be taking a chance when I book my little vacation in the fall, because I think I'm just going to head a little bit further south in BC and kind of hang out here. But I don't know if there is a big clamor to travel internationally. I think going to the U.S. is one thing, going, you know, hopping over the ocean may be quite another, but vaccine passports, that is a big, deep, dark conversation that I think we're going to be faced with probably sooner rather than later. And I think we can all smell an election coming. So I think the more boxes that Trudeau can tick in regards to, you know, quote, fixing what's happened with the pandemic, all the better. And is that why this was a quiet announcement? I don't know.
Yeah, well, I think, and that's going to be our next topic, right? The PM has kicked off a cross-Canada tour promising all kinds of goodies. Will any of them happen? Find out next. I'm Amanda Galbraith on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
This is Free for All Fridays with host Amanda Galbraith on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome back to the show, where we recap the five biggest stories of the week. And today we're joined by Tammy Williams, news anchor for AM 1150 in Kelowna, BC, and John Moore, host of More in the Morning on News Talk 1010 here in Toronto, Ontario. All right. Well, it's that time of year again. You get a car, you get a car, and you get a car, Tammy. No, we're not Oprah. It's Prime Minister Trudeau, and he's begun his pre-election tour to remind Canadians of all of the goodies that await them on the other side of the rainbow should they re-elect his government. So he was in Nova Scotia on Tuesday with Premier Ian Rankin to announce the $10 a day daycare would be a reality in 5 years. Here's Prime Minister Trudeau discussing the $605 million deal.
As part of the agreement, in the next 5 years, you'll work with the provincial government to achieve an average of $10 a day childcare for all regulated spaces for kids under six. By the end of next year, average childcare fees will be cut in half.
Nova Scotia Premier Rankin also weighed in.
This isn't just strong social policy, but it is a strong integral part of how we grow a more inclusive economy. It's undoubtedly a landmark deal for Nova Scotia.
So if you'll remember, this announcement came, the original announcement of this was a $27.2 billion over 5 years in the budget. We know that BC had the announcement last week about Trudeau for daycare. PEI has confirmed they're in talks. Quebec already has one. And Alberta and Ontario are sort of, you know, in the works, which sounds good, right? I mean, when this first came out, I was really happy about it. I think this is actually an important policy. But I've been reminded by folks, and the NDP have been out saying it, that the Liberals first announced this in 1993. So my question to the panel is, why is it different this time? And should we believe these promises? John, what do you think?
Well, yes, it was announced in 1993. I think the closest we ever got to it was under Paul Martin, and he was looking for a legacy deal, and he actually did. I mean, honestly, Amanda, it was one of the first times that anybody negotiated a not unilateral, but an agreement that included every single province and territory, and he came up with a national daycare program. It was going to happen. And then he lost power. And like many governments that come into power that have stolen power away after many years, the federal conservatives decided they had to undo whatever Paul Martin had done, even if some of the things that he had done or previous prime minister had done wasn't a bad idea. And so they undid it. So the NDP is being disingenuous in all of this because we really were close to a national daycare program. Now, is it a good idea? Is it affordable? I have an expression I often use that I used to use back in the day with Kathleen Wynne's provincial government in Ontario called it would be nice syndrome. There's a lot of things that would be really, really nice. It would be nice if we had free daycare. It'd be nice if public transit was free. It would be nice if everybody had $500 a month cash deposited in their bank accounts. Does it actually add up for government policy? And I can't honestly speak to what the model is. I am extraordinarily mindful, though, that having a national daycare program or having any kind of daycare program is integral, and especially for the aspirations and the freedom of women.
Yeah, and that's where this to me crosses partisan lines a little bit. And I remember because I was in the government that dismantled the original thing, right? We also dismantled the Kelowna Accord
right.
When Harper was first elected. Yeah, there's a few things we just erased, which now today I think might have been interesting to have in place. But you know, Tammy, we had the PM out last week when he made this announcement with your premier, and I know BC's actually already had a pilot about $10 a day daycare in 2017. But some folks, actually political strategists, described it as a bit like the prime minister got to get a good award and punch Jagmeet Singh in the face because you know he cut him off at the knees with this thing. So what's been the reaction in BC out there? Do they believe this is going to be reality, or do people see it as sort of electioneering?
Well, you know, if I had my cynical hat on, which I think in this case I do, you know, when I used to watch wrestling, it was, can you smell what The Rock is cooking? Well, I think what we can smell in this case is an election cooking. So I really do believe that it was electioneering. Now, once I was a single mom for a while early on, very early on in my career. And daycare was expensive, and now so even more. But when I do look at this, you know, I think there's a lot of questions that people will have if they want to try and access this program. Like, what is a regulated space? Like, my mom was so helpful to me when I was a single mom. Is she a regulated space? Could she qualify for, you know, some of the funding? I don't know. It still feels like there aren't quite enough of the boxes checked for this to really happen.
Yeah, and actually it is arguable that maybe the better system is the voucher system where you say, you know, we're going to give you $500 a month or whatever the sum is, and you can do what you want. And if your mom is the one, or your dad or whatever is the person who's looking after, or you want to have somebody come to your house while you go out to work, look after your kids, here's the money. But I would also argue, incidentally, now Quebec gets money from Ottawa like nobody else, and they've had $7 a day daycare for, I think, like 20 years. I mean, honestly, I think it predates my leaving Quebec, and it worked. Now, it works because they get the money from Ottawa.
Yeah, and I, you know, the question is, Ottawa's got $27 billion down on the table, which sounds like a lot of money, by the way. They're estimating it's over 5 years, and a lot of folks think it's not enough, right? And I guess this is where, you know, having been inside campaigns, and I've been inside federal campaigns and municipal campaigns where we've basically drawn up very fancy transit announcements that then once you get into government, get reduced down to a couple stops and a sign. And, you know, I guess the question here is how do they turn these very elaborate policy announcements into viable plans that actually make a difference for like a broad spectrum of people? Like, a lot of criticism of this, which is why people like vouchers, is that maybe they'll only be located in urban centers. What about rural people? Mm. Like, this is actually why a lot of conservatives oppose it. So how do you think governments are able to make that leap beyond, you know, fancy announcements to actually viable plans? Or, you know, does it matter, John?
Well, I think it is a fancy announcement. I mean, this reminds me, I always come back to this. And again, for a national audience, I have to situate ourselves. You know, you and I are in broadcasting largely in Toronto. And I have a map in front of me of a proposed subway system from 1912. And it was fantastic. And it's better than the one we have now. And much like national daycare, it's sort of like Lucy and the football, right? They announce, every single provincial and municipal government will announce that they've got some master plan for a new subway, a new streetcar, new light rail, and then one of the other government changes and they take it away from us. So I don't put a lot of stock in this. But I also would question, I'd be interested in hearing what Tammy has to say about this. I'm not sure that it's a ballot question. You know, I don't think a lot of people go to the ballot box thinking about national daycare, even if it's a vital thing for their families.
You know, I'll just say something that's kind of along these lines of everything seems to be wrapped around the pandemic, which I think will be part of going into the election, is Trudeau saying, look at all these successes that we've had during the pandemic. I just don't know why they had to form this announcement around the pandemic. Like, $10 daycare's always been a good idea, not just now. You know, so when he was here, he did say the pandemic has laid bare what women and feminists have long known, that without good childcare, it's practically impossible for parents to build a career. We've always known that. The pandemic didn't point that out.
You're absolutely right. And actually, Amanda and Tammy, I'm looking at a text that came in from somebody listening right now. And they said, I'm a mom of 4-year-old twins. I haven't worked in over 4 years. If I had affordable daycare, I could go back to work.
Yeah, I think that says it all, right? And like your point, Tammy, did the pandemic lay it bare? No. I think the pandemic gave them a viable excuse to spend billions and billions and billions of dollars in a way that wasn't maybe in the offing. Like, I think people were willing to spend on, like, deficits are less of an issue for voters, which we know from polling. But, you know, the extraordinary amounts of spending happening right now is something we haven't seen in Canadian history, frankly. And people don't give a shit. Like, they don't care, right? The public doesn't care. That's why they keep doing it. And I think this is, if the prime minister wants a legacy, and this is a big legacy piece, right? This is what Paul Martin was denied. You know, his father was huge in changing this country, whether you like it or not. So to me, I think this is a bit of legacy building, not just for him, but also for Chrystia Freeland, who is the deputy PM and finance minister, who is a woman, our first female finance minister, but also has significant leadership ambitions once this prime minister's done. And if she can say after another mandate that she delivered it, I mean, that's a big feather in her cap for leadership. Okay, well, rich people are going to space, and it's making a bunch of us earthbound folks mad. You won't believe why. That's next on Free For All Friday. I'm Amanda Galbraith on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
The Free for All Friday Roundtable continues on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
I'm Amanda Galbraith, host of Free for All Friday, where we unpack the five biggest stories of the week. And today we're joined by Tammy Williams, news anchor for AM 1150 in Kelowna, BC, and John Moore, host of More in the Morning on News Talk 1010 in Toronto, Ontario. This week, billionaire Richard Branson achieved a lifelong dream of flying into space. This is what it sounded like in the ship.
Release. And 60 seconds, and that is a full duration burn, folks. We are headed to space.
To infinity and beyond!
All right, well, that last part isn't. I added that because I thought it was great. So now, Branson boarded a rocket-powered vehicle developed by Virgin Galactic, which is a spinoff of his airline, with five other crew members. So they blasted off from New Mexico desert and reached the edge of space, which is like 85 kilometers high. Now, I did not realize you can reach the edge of space in only 85 kilometers from the ground, which to me is a bit insane. But Branson is not the only one. Amazon billionaire Jeff Bezos will also take flight from Texas next week on his own space company. Blue Origin. Critics, now that noise makes me happy, that made me smile, but some critics, doesn't make them smile. In fact, they've been vocal saying those resources should be used to tackle other things like poverty, climate change, or even the pandemic. This is Richard Branson responding to that criticism.
I 100% agree that people who are in positions of wealth and should spend most of their money, 90% or more of their money, trying to tackle these issues. But we should also create new industries that can create 800 engineers and scientists who can create wonderful things that can make space accessible at a fraction of the environmental cost that it's been in the past.
John, question you, are these critics right? Should we lose the space race and focus our efforts here on Earth?
I'm a bit squishy on this. I mean, it's a whack of money. I think the ticket is going to be $250,000 for, a civilian who wants to buy a ticket to take the same trip that Richard Branson took. But I find it kind of disingenuous, to be perfectly honest. Rich people spend money on themselves. Bill Gates has a house that is 66,000 square feet. He owns a Gutenberg Bible. The members of the Walton family, who are some of the most ungenerous, uncharitable people around and yet richest people on Earth, nobody complains about them. Sylvester Stallone is reputed to put on a fresh pair of underwear every day and throw that underwear out at the end of the day. So nobody's criticizing that, but all of a sudden, because we get into this idea of this space adventure, everybody's crapping all over Bezos and Branson. And I'm just not sure where it's coming from, aside from sort of petty jealousy.
Tammy, quick to you, do you think, there's lots of inventions and things that actually result of this. I'm kind of a fan of, I think space exploration is important. But I don't know if I buy this. Sorry, just getting something in my ear here real quick. But Tammy, looks like Doug. So Premier, we're going to go take you live now to Barrie, Ontario, the scene of yesterday's tornado, where Premier Doug Ford is ready to speak.
Just absolutely, first heart-wrenching, but it's devastating, and just thank God no one was killed. It's an absolute miracle. I just want to tell the people here that we're going to have their backs, we're going to have their support, anything they need, we'll be here. I want to give a real shout-out to the frontline first responders. They're, as I always say, they're absolute heroes. Had a conversation with the mayor, and thank you, mayor, and the councillor for their leadership. I had a conversation with the CEO of Royal Victoria Hospital as well. It's all hands on deck, and when they were just briefing me now, there's so much support coming in from all over the province for the people, and I just want to reassure them we're going to be here and we're going to get them back on their feet and support them any way we can.
What about lessons learned?
Well, when there's a natural disaster and a tornado comes through and you can see how one side of the street, not a leaf is touched, and then all of a sudden it takes these houses out. The lesson learned, in my opinion, is we stick together and everyone comes in and supports. And I just met a family at the corner, and I said, "Do you live here?" They said, "No, we're here to help any way we can." That's the spirit, the Ontario spirit,
I can't get in chills just talking about it because everyone pitches in. We've went through a real challenging time over the last 16, 17 months. Everyone's helped out, and we're going to do the same here, band together.
And, so what can the province do to help out?
Well, we're going to be here supporting them. If insurance doesn't cover, then we're going to step up and help them out. We're just going to be in communications with the mayor and for their request. But anything the city needs, we're going to be there for them. Anything the homeowners that the insurance doesn't cover, we're going to be here for them.
And what is the city set up right now with what they need from the province?
Well, we're in communications with the mayor, and once they get the list together, we'll be there to support them. And again, I want to thank the people from Innisfil and Barrie for everyone pitching in. So if you don't mind, I'm going to pass it to my Solicitor General, and then I want to mention Doug Downey. Where's Andrea? Okay, so we have the Attorney General, and this is your area or Andrew's?
Andrea.
This is Andrea's area, and I know the Solicitor General is working on this, so I'll pass it over to you.
Can I just ask, what goes through your mind as you walk around and see this?
It's just shocking. It's heartbreaking. You know, these people have been just within, you know, minutes, literally, their lives have changed, but we're going to get them back on their feet. We're going to pull out all the stops, and whatever it takes, we're going to get them supported. Any way we can. This is terrible, but that's the strength of Ontario. We'll get through it, and I just thank God that no one got killed in this tragedy. So, Solicitor General,
yeah. Yeah.
Well, we'll take that review, and we'll be inspecting the houses, and especially that one that just collapsed, to make sure that they met the building codes. And I know the building inspectors, and I can't speak for Barrie, but I'll pass that question to the mayor. But I have confidence in our building inspectors. I really do. That they met the requirements. But again, no matter what requirements with a building inspector, you have a tornado. It doesn't matter how you build it. It can, like, look at that car. It's just it's shocking. Absolutely shocking. So I'll pass to the Solicitor General.
You asked about lessons learned. We've already heard the coordination between the paramedics, the fire, and the police was exemplary. And that speaks to when coordination happens, it works well. We've had offer support. Chief Greenwood has talked about how paramedics from other communities came in to assist and offer assistance. Same thing was happening with police and fire. So that coordination also happens at a provincial level through Solicitor General. We have the Provincial Emergency Operations Center. But quite frankly, right now, Barrie is doing an excellent job, and we have not needed to provide any assistance. That will, of course, change as we get further into the cleanup and making sure that all of the necessary supports that the city needs, that the homeowners need, are there.
There are two things that come out of this in terms of communication. One is the tornado alert. People see the tornado going to the phones and only then see the alert. And the second thing is public education. Everybody I talked to read to the reason. They
yes.
knew what to do.
Yep.
Any comments?
Which again speaks to the education that obviously the city of Barrie has. Unfortunately, Barrie has had some experience with tornadoes in the past, and that education piece is critical. In terms of the tornado warning, of course, those are issued by the federal government. And my understanding from speaking to people who were in the vicinity is those warnings came appropriately and quickly. And so I appreciate the federal government keeping that up to date as well.
Mayor?
Thanks, Mr. Premier. So I want to thank Premier Ford for being here today, and I want to thank him for his phone call yesterday. He called me within hours of the storm and said whatever we need in Barrie, the province will be there for us. The assistance that's been given to Barrie from across the province, from our neighbors especially, has just been exemplary. You can see from the devastation around us how severe this storm was, an F2 tornado. Unfortunately, this is the third tornado in my lifetime in the city of Barrie, Premier. We are at one end of Tornado Alley, and I think the Solicitor General is absolutely right. The experience with that showed, because so many of our residents went to their basements, and that probably saved their lives. To not have loss of life here is extraordinary, but I cannot say enough about how supportive all of our neighbors have been, how supportive the Premier, my Minister Steve Clark, and others have been, everybody reaching out to Barrie, mayors from cities across the province, to help Barrie out on one of our most difficult days.
Mayor, how can the province help? Is there anything that they can do immediately to provide support?
Well, at the moment, we've got sufficient resources for what we're trying to do today, we think. So as the Premier says, we'll be taking a look at whether there's additional help required, disaster funding and so forth going forward. And just as he says, for those folks who are without insurance and have lost all their possessions, there may be opportunities there. The work, you can see the number of crews out here already trying to restore electricity, trying to go door to door to make sure homes are safe. And the minister offered, Steve Clark called me and offered that help from his ministry, the Ministry of Housing. So if we need that, we will certainly call on it, and we hugely appreciate the offers.
Maybe we have there's no one that deals with their residents more than the local representatives. And we have the councillor and Andrea and Doug. Where's our local councillor? There you are. Sorry. So Andrea, go ahead, because you deal with these folks on a daily basis, all three of you, and...
You can hear it from Mike McCann as well, the local councillor, but just talking to the local residents, obviously, it's devastating for them. They've been in this area for a long time. So me and my team are just trying to help we have two hands, everyone who can come out and help and bring gloves, bring brooms. The community's really come together. We've got the Allendale Home Hardware crew that was out here today handing out brooms, gloves, shovels, what have you. The local pool guys have been coming by to help people with that debris. It's just incredible that everyone's trying to pitch in as much as they can. And Mike can tell us about this community. They're really, it really brings them all together, and it's all hands on deck today. So I'm really grateful for everyone who's come in and given the efforts and helping. And so this isn't just going to be today that needs help, but it's going to be tomorrow and for a month from now, so we can get everyone back on their feet.
Are there calls coming into your constituents' office of people asking for things, and what are they asking?
Yeah, it's a great question. So the big actual question right now is all the debris, right? So it's just, there's metal, everything everywhere. So people really want to be able to tidy up stuff and need somewhere to go. So simple things like collecting bins, that's what they need most. Brooms, people's brooms have flown away. That's a big need. So we're hearing that. And most recently, some people who need some counseling because it was very dramatic. So that's a big bulk of the calls we've been getting.
Andrea, I hear there's a shortage of rental cars, and a lot of cars destroyed here, as well as hotel rooms.
Yeah, so we're lucky in the community. We've got a lot of, in terms of vehicle car companies that are willing to come step up to the plate and help some people out. But yeah, there is a lot of car damage for sure. And that's going to take some time to recover to get people a new vehicle as well.
And hotels?
At hotels, we're looking to get more volunteers. We haven't had the calls into our office quite yet, but anyone who can volunteer a spot, there's people that are going to need rentals. And there's some local real estate and some local individuals here that are happy to put up individuals who need a place to stay.
Can you spell
your first and last name? First name's Andrea and last name's K-H-A-N-J-I-N.
And the gentleman before, sorry, I know...
Yes, I'm the mayor, Jeff Lehman, J-E-F-F-L-E-H-M-A-N. Just on the hotels, a number of them were booked up, we know, by the insurance process. We know that some of those have been released, I think, for tonight. That was a night of expecting there could be a larger number of people that had shelter. We, through the Red Cross, did have lock already, so we were good. We were able to put all the people that needed help, came to the triage center, into hotels that needed it. Most people found a place with friends and family,
yeah,
as they do. Could be.
What the city of Barrie has, the third highest rent in the whole country.
So yep. What are these? Higher than Toronto. And the pressure on our housing market when we lose any housing units increases. That's why we're trying to get so much more built. The subdivisions across the street here are some of the new growth that will occur in Barrie. But of course, you're seeing it around the city in the cranes that are up, the affordable housing that we're trying to get built here. But for these folks, the focus today needs to be on helping them with their lives that have been torn apart, and certainly trying to help them recover their treasured possessions and so on.
Do we have a number, Mayor, as to how many people are actually displaced?
It's over 100 at the moment, but again, some went to friends and family, so we're just getting in touch with them as they come back, right? I mean, people left very quickly after the storm in some cases.
Can we get an update on people who were hospitalized yesterday?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were 10 brought to RVH. All but two have been released, I'm pleased to say. There were two with more serious injuries. They remain at RVH. But just extraordinary. I mean, as the Premier said, you look at this storm. How there were not life-threatening injuries or people killed, it's incredible. So two remain at RVH. The rest are released and recuperating at home.
Still in serious condition?
I'm not sure of the condition at the moment. I do know they are not life-threatening injuries. Yeah.
Maybe I'll add, we talked about, Andrew Cajun talked about maybe the great attitude of the residents here in Barrie, and Premier Doug Ford talked about, you know, the Ontario. And I got to tell you, from last night to today, it's night and day. There was a disaster zone yet last night, and right now, as you can tell, it's still a bit of a disaster zone, but it's cleaned up so much. I just want to thank the paramedics, thank the all the first responders. I want to thank Premier Doug Ford for coming. You know, been such a great grouping together, you know, to bring the support. I just want to say that it's not over yet, and I think MPP Andrew Cajun talked about the spirit last night when talking to residents that their homes look like this behind us. They all had great spirits because I think they all had hope, and they knew that this community was coming together. So on behalf of myself, I'd like to thank you for coming, and it really brings a big morale to the city.
Thank you.
Mike,
have you had calls to your office from people here?
I've had many calls calling me directly. I like to give out my personal number, and people are calling me, asking me for, they've got rooms. I mean, I offered my room 18 times last night and no one took the offer. That just goes to show you that, you know, there is so much support from friends and family already. I've had people donate money. I've had Coca-Cola donate lots of products, big business. So I think, as the mayor said earlier, you know, we don't know exactly where the need's going to be in 12 hours, 24 hours, but this community, this province are on the balls of their feet, ready to help out. And it doesn't stop here. It's going to keep on going.
So that was Ontario Premier Doug Ford speaking after a tornado tore a 5-kilometer path of destruction through Barrie, Ontario. He was joined by Barrie Mayor Jeff Lehman, Solicitor General Sylvia Jones, and the local MPP Andrew Cajun. And for those listening outside of Ontario, Barrie is a community located about an hour north of Toronto. Their population is 150,000 people, and the tornado, they believe, was about 100 meters wide at some point, rated an EF2 with winds of up to 210 kilometers. Now, miraculously, while there was damage to over 25 homes, there was no loss of life, as the mayor mentioned, and two people just remain in hospital. You know, John, I think quite a story today, and kind of what struck me at the end of that press conference was the mayor kind of speaking about, you know, people are on the balls of their feet, right? The community coming together to support, and, you know, kind of the unification we've seen around Barrie, which was struck, I think, really dramatically and quickly yesterday.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, these are times that are going to test people, and this came out of nowhere. People were just doing what they were going to do from 2:30 to 2:45 yesterday afternoon in Barrie, and then all of a sudden, some of them got a warning, some of them didn't. Some of them looked out and saw the sky turning purple and yellow. But I think if there's anything to be grateful for, it's that there are these services, there are these emergency responders, there are these mechanisms, there are plans when something like this happens, and people leap to action and they do everything they can to preserve property and save lives. And then, you know, 24 hours later, almost, we're sort of regathering and trying to figure out where we're going. But whenever people complain about, you know, I'm so overtaxed, or I can't stand government, or all politicians are incompetent or self-serving, I always think at a time like this, I don't know that anybody knows if the mayor of Barrie is conservative or liberal. I actually saw John Tory, I think, if you were looking, standing in back of Doug Ford. You know, people pull together and they do what needs to be done.
Yeah, which is the right thing, right? And I think, you know, it's interesting, too, they're talking about this early warning system. And, you know, tornado alerts are not unique here to Ontario. They're sort of these sort of paths in BC, in Alberta, you know, in other areas of the country. And a lot of questions are about the warning system here. Now, if you folks were listening to the radio around here, they were interrupting quite a bit. You know, I think we're lucky that people weren't injured. There was a tornado in 1985 there where 8 people were killed. So I think there will be some further discussion. There's discussion about that. Okay, well, before we went to this press conference, we were tackling and talking about travel to space. And, you know, this week, Richard Branson has moved to space. He's also, Jeff Bezos is also be announcing a trip next week. And I think, Tammy, I was about to go to you and ask you what you make of that. What you make of that trip? Do you think that we should be spending money on going to space? Are these innovations important, or should we be spending them on things at home, such as pandemic relief, such as solving poverty? Tammy, what's your take on that story?
Oh boy. Well, so, you know, ultimately I think it's Branson's money, and he should spend it as he sees fit. I do believe he's quite philanthropic. I think there's quite a few charities that he's involved with, and he is, quote, helpful. But if we boil it down to, you know, is making space more accessible what they're doing, I don't think it is, because I think only a select few will ever have enough money to really be able to go along for the ride. Even if I had that much money, there is absolutely no way I personally want to leave the planet. I like it here. And I just hope this doesn't lead to, you know, us eventually, you know, is it possible that we explore space so much that we're going to be able to hang out on the moon? I don't know if we should be doing that. I don't know. We've kind of done some damage to this planet. I don't think we should be doing damage anywhere else.
Now, you know, the Bezos story is really interesting, right? Because, you know, Virgin is saying that their commercial space travel is going to launch next year for $250,000 a person. But Bezos has auctioned off the seat next to him on his trip next week for $28 million.
Yep.
That's right. $28 million. What else could that do? And hilariously, the person that originally won it is not going because they have scheduling conflicts, and then send an 18-year-old high school graduate.
Who has a scheduling conflict for a flight to space?
I don't know. Like, that, isn't that amazing? I literally could not.
Oh, man, that's my bridge night.
Right? It's crazy. Yeah. Like, it is, like, just how, you know, the bananas world of billionaires. But I think that we should spend money on space travel. I think it's important. And, you know, I did a little bit of research around, you know, what technological advancements has resulted from space travel. So, you know, for example, camera sensors that resulted from space travel. So they had to create tiny cameras in space to monitor. And that's what's in your smartphone now. GPS. Originally, we were launching satellites right into space. Now that's used for GPS. So you can get around cities. Like when I try and drive around Montreal before GPS, I would get lost constantly now. And like, now you can use it. So I think there's some $28 million aside, I actually do think seeing the private sector kind of step in is important on these things. But what do you think, John?
Well, I just think it's apples to oranges, to be perfectly honest. I mean, I'm not trying to defend all of this. It's an incredible luxury that these two billionaires enjoy. But people spend money on stuff. There are soccer players who make $10 million a year. There are movies that cost $500 million. There's all kinds of things. I mean, easily somebody who doesn't have enough to eat could argue that the houses we're in at this very moment broadcasting from are a luxury, and who do we think we are? So I'm not sure where this anger is coming from. I just think it's because people look at this as a particularly, you know, a big frippery. And so they say, well, where could we have spent that money? But, you know, billionaires spend their money.
It's true. It's true. So, Tammy, if you wouldn't spend your money going to space, is there anywhere you really want to go or to?
I don't know. At this point, I'd just be happy going to a Soyuz, quite frankly. But you know what? I'm like you. I really do think that we should be exploring space, and technology's great. But I don't know if advancements are going to be made by the people who are on these flights with these two guys. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. They did do an experiment on the Virgin Atlantic. So you saw them kind of bobbing around with a little tube. So that did happen. All right. A bit of an unusual and abbreviated show today, because we did break in for that press conference from Premier Ford. But glad to hear everybody in Barrie is safe. Again, thank you, Hannah and Mike, for helping the show. Thank you, John and Tammy, for joining today in the debate.
Nice to be
I'm Amanda
here.
Galbraith. Thank you guys for coming. I'm Amanda Galbraith. I will see you next Friday.